okay, and based on all this information, well, here's the strategies that are available to you, the ones that we're going to recommend. Here's what the strategy is. Here's how it benefits you. Here's what you need to do about it. And of course, here's the risks in some situations. Some strategies are not black and white. The one thing interesting about the task code, quick side note, is that not everything within the task code is black and white. Some things are open for interpretation. Some things carry more risk than others. Really, it comes down to educating our clients on what is available and guiding them through that path for them so that they're taking the right action so that when it comes time to filing their tax returns, they're putting themselves in a favorable tax position.
Welcome to the Passive Income Brothers podcast.
Here, we take the fear out of real estate investing using real-life stories of everyday successful investors.
Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. My name is Tim Wyans, and today I'm joined by two absolute rock stars, one of which is my brother from another mother, Paul Dirks. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing well, Tim. It's great to be here. It's now 2024, and it's a great opportunity for all of us to think about what our financial goals are here in the new year and who can help us achieve them. So, exciting day to be here. Exciting guest on our podcast as well.
Yeah. So, you know, here at the Passive Income Brothers podcast, you know, we love to highlight the fact that it's a journey, right? It's a journey that you're surrounded by, you know, team members and tribe members, that you're not doing this alone, that there's a lot of people who are in the same boat as you, and they're trying to row in the same direction. And what we harp on a lot is building out that team, getting into the right rooms, getting into a mastermind, getting into, you know, a tribe that, you know, because listen, at the end of the day, we're going to, you know, rise and fall to the level of expectation that we set for ourselves and for those around us. So today's a great example of that. So today we have Thomas Castelli from the Real Estate CPA. How are you doing today, Thomas?
Great. It's an honor to be here today, kicking off 2024 in the right way. So happy to be here.
Well, you know, it's funny that we have you on the podcast, Pete. Well, not funny. I love having a podcast because I've been listening to you on your podcast. I'm following your social media and I'm on your email list and I've been, you know, doing all those things. And when I got to meet, you know, Paul was like, yeah, I use those guys, you know? And it's funny how everything comes full circle. But, you know, when you're surrounding yourself with good people, you want to have the tools available to you. So Thomas, can you kind of take us through, you know, before you were a real estate CPA and you had the podcast and you had the, you know, the tribe that you're building, the masterminds, you know, how did you kind of come to thinking that, you know, real estate and your CPA background kind of come together? Like, what did that journey look like for you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it all started for me probably my sophomore year of college. So I was going to school. I was on the accounting track. Everybody told me if I was going to go to school for business, go for accounting or finance. So there I was in the accounting track. And I kind of realized that the standard 9-to-5 grind alone wouldn't get me to where I want to go in life. And so I started reading books. I started with the Richest Man in Babylon. That was the first like self-help, like personal finance book I read. But then it quickly evolved into Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I know a lot of people read getting into the real estate. And what I started to see as I kind of read more and more books is that real estate was part of the wealth building process, the wealth building journey for a lot of wealthy individuals and families. So I kind of started getting interested. And then around... interesting, my great-grandfather, my great-uncle had passed away at the age of 99, and he had this estate, and in the estate, it was actually in Bethpage on Long Island, there was his house, and his house was on a lot that everybody knew you could put at least three houses on, and it was right down the block from a train station that went into New York City. So I was like, there's opportunity here. So I started going to real estate networking events and meetups and what have you. And I ended up stumbling upon a group who was doing a three-day multifamily syndication weekend. And this was right in between the time where I was about to start my first full-time job at a national accounting firm. And it was the summer in between that time. And so I went to their three-day weekend. I fell in love with the model of real estate syndication and the entire, you know, ability to acquire large-scale properties, raise capital. It was very entrepreneurial, very capitalistic in my mind, and I kind of fell in love with that model. I started going to their monthly meetup events, and then from there started investing in limited partnership opportunities with someone who would become a mentor to me. And then, yeah, this mentor, he said, "Hey, look, if you ever find a deal, we'll syndicate the deal." So I went ahead. I started hitting the phones. Met a broker who sent me, you know, a bunch of deals. One of them eventually penciled out. And long story short, we syndicated it. We went full cycle. We actually sold it May of 2020, right in the middle of COVID. We're slated to close in March, but we ended up kicking it out due to all the uncertainty. So that was exciting. And then I basically now invest as a limited partner, and I am a tax strategist for real estate investors. So kind of blended my accounting background with my passion for real estate into something that helps more people reduce taxes.
That's wonderful to hear. And Thomas, I've known you for a few years, and I think it's very interesting to hear that not only are you an investor, but you're obviously an accountant that works with investors, and your whole firm is tailored to working with investors. Maybe stepping back for a second, can you maybe discuss for us some of the primary ways in which you guys as a firm work with investors, what types of real estate investors, and then of course our audience and our focus here is on passive income investing. What are some of the ways in which your firm works with passive investors?
Absolutely. So our firm is a firm that exclusively works with real estate investors. So all of our clients are investing in real estate in some way, shape, or form, with as little as one property all the way up to portfolios of properties and syndicates and funds that are doing hundreds of millions of dollars in acquisitions. And the way we help them, what kind of sets us apart from other firms is that our focus, first and foremost, on client service. I think a lot of accounting firms don't really do enough in that area. They kind of just let it kind of go to the wayside, but also our focus on helping people reduce taxes, helping investors reduce taxes. Like a lot of times you'll go to your CPA or CPA firm and they'll say, you know, you'll give them your documents and they'll file your tax returns for you, send you on your merry way. And they won't ever give you any advice or help you strategize on what things you can put in place to minimize your taxes when it comes time to file your tax returns. So I think that's one big way that sets us apart is one-on-one tax consulting. Like we'll actually sit down with you, see what you have going on, and lay out a map on how to reduce taxes. We obviously do prepare tax returns to help people with tax compliance, as most firms do. We also have outsourced accounting and bookkeeping services for people who want to get out of like the day-to-day bookkeeping of their portfolio. So we help people in that on that end as well. When it comes to passive investors specifically, we have worked with a lot of passive investors or limited partners in the past. What we found works best for limited partners now is that we typically do one-on-one consultations or bring them into our community where they can get answers from our team of tax experts. That's kind of how we work with limited partners at this point is one-on-one consultations as well as a community-based forum where they can get answers from the experts themselves.
Well, as I like to say in this podcast, I'm about to start doing some push-ups in the aisle way here because I just get fired up about taxes and limited partnerships and syndicates. But more importantly, you're the journey that you've been on, right? I mean, like you went to school and, you know, someone told you along the way, if you're going to study business, do, you know, finance or CPA, right? And what you would think, and Paul can jump in, you know, on this because he's a chartered financial analyst, right? He's a Wall Street guy or a former Wall Street guy, I should say, now, Paul. You know, stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, annuities, registered investment advisories, your quote unquote guy, right? And you kind of set it and forget it. And, you know, when you're approaching your 40s and 50s and 60s, you start to, you know, figure out, oh, I should really be paying attention to where my money's going. And, you know, it's just, it's like an antiquated way, I feel like, of, you know, figuring out your finances and how to build wealth. I mean, it's no secret, and you know we talked about it a lot here, that you know we don't learn this stuff in high school or college. There's no course, there's no prescribed, you know, general education, you know, pathway to figure out how to use debt, leverage, how to figure out taxes. I mean, a lot of us, you know, on this, you know, all of us on this call, I mean, you have you're traditionally trained as a CPA, but you know, I had to learn from Tom Wheelwright and the Rich Dad Advisors and podcast and going to meetups and, you know, just learning how taxes worked. I mean, it's such a, you know, part of Tom Wheelwright's book, and I'm sure everybody knows it, but if they don't, it's a must read. It's called Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. He's part of the Robert Kiyosaki Rich Dad Advisor crew. And in one of the opening chapters, he talks about, you know, how you work until April or May each year just to satisfy your tax requirement. And it's an expense, you know, and people don't view their taxes as expenses. So, You know, Thomas, when we talk about some of this stuff about, you know, kind of grinding our way to the top and learning on our own, you know, how has that shaped how you approach, you know, your clients who come to your firm, but they're maybe limited partners, or maybe they have a couple of, you know, rentals, single family rentals, because that's kind of the trajectory that we see. You know, you do a single family rental, then you do two or three, and then you don't like being a landlord anymore. So now you find out, oh my God, there's syndicates, you know, let me be an LP. You know, how do you approach those conversations? And what are some of the things that you're hearing in real time? Some of the pain points.
Yeah, and absolutely. A lot of it is a lot of the pain points that we hear, and it really helps aid in our approach, is that people, the CPAs that they're working with, the accountants that they're working with, aren't providing them with the guidance that they need to actually navigate the complexities of the tax code and use it in such a way so they can reduce taxes, which is often their largest expense. So that's one of the pain points. Another one is, of course, like you mentioned, they don't teach this stuff in school. Unless you go to school to become an accountant, this stuff isn't available to you. And frankly, even when you go to school to become an accountant, it's more focused on compliance with the law and not on how to actually utilize the law to help people reduce taxes. So we take a big approach. It's a very consultative approach and educational approach on educating clients on not only what is available out there, what strategies are out there, but also how it benefits them and how they can use it, and specifically what they have to do in many cases, right? So, like, you know, in many cases, our conversations go, okay, what do you have going on? What's your tax and financial situation? What are your goals? Okay, great. Now we know where you are, where you're looking to go. Here's what level of commitment are you, how committed are you to real estate? Are you more on the passive side or more on the active side? Okay, and based on all this information, well, here's the strategies that are available to you, the ones that we're going to recommend. Here's what the strategy is. Here's how it benefits you. Here's what you need to do about it. And of course, here's the risks in some situations. Some strategies are not black and white. The one thing interesting about the tax code, quick side note, is that not everything within the tax code is black and white. Some things are open for interpretation. Some things carry more risk than others. So really, it comes down to educating our clients on what is available and guiding them through that path for them, so they're taking the right action so that when it comes time to filing their tax returns, they're putting themselves in a favorable tax position, or more favorable tax position than they would be if they had not gone through that.
I think that's so important, Thomas. And, you know, certainly in my experience as a client and somebody who's been a real estate investor, I can attest to the fact that a lot of these strategies are powerful. Maybe you could, in a very quick manner for us, discuss the difference between passive income and non-passive income. And why does that matter for the real estate investor? And, you know, once you address those, perhaps you could discuss how you've seen that difference in income, how that guides future, you know, tax treatments and investment decisions for the real estate investors that you work with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So non-passive income I guess you can say that earned income, right? That's another way people might refer to it as. That's income that you're generating from your efforts. So it's a job that you might have, or it might be a business that you're running. Most income that people think of is most of the time falls in the non-passive bucket. And a non-passive income is typically taxed as ordinary income, which can be up to 37% at the federal level. And then you have state taxes on it. Then you have something called FICA, which is Social Security, Medicare, which can be 7.65% of your income up to a threshold. And then that, if you're self-employed, is actually doubled, so 15.3%. So that's the type of taxes you're paying on earned income, and it's a non-passive income. And it's not uncommon to see people paying 40 to sometimes even 50% if you live in a state like California or a state like New York, on the earned income. And the thing about non-passive or earned income is it's very difficult to shelter from tax. You know, you have your 401k contributions, perhaps your HSA contributions, your health savings accounts, and other things, charitable contributions, things of that nature. But very challenging to offset. Now, with passive income, which is where you'll find your rental income, whether you're an active investor or you're a passive investor, rental income tends to be on the passive side. And the interesting thing about passive income is it is also taxed at ordinary income rates, so up to 37%. Usually you won't see the self-employment tax or the FICA tax on that. but there's something called depreciation, which is a non-cash expense that can help you reduce your taxable income, but not necessarily your cash flow. So you might actually tell the IRS, hey, I have a loss on this form of income, my rental income, my passive income, despite the fact that you're generating positive cash flow. So the passive bucket's more easy to shelter your income, I guess is the point I'm trying to get to here. So what we see a lot of investors doing is starting to focus from just generating earned income or non-passive income and starting to take that and starting to invest in passive sources of income that can, first of all, you know, don't always take your time and effort to actually generate, but B, can also be sheltered from tax. So you're actually, long story short here, is as you start to siphon off your non-passive income into the passive bucket, what we often see is people have lower effective tax rates. And what that means is you're paying less taxes compared to the income you're earning. And we've seen people generate significant amounts of wealth doing that. So just taking their non-passive income and putting it into the passive bucket.
I love that, right? Because that was eye-opening to me. As a New York City firefighter and an ER nurse, I was strictly W-2, right? I didn't have a tax strategy. I smoked a lot of opium, and I hoped that I got, you know, 5-10 grand back a year. And that was just my strategy. And, you know, when you finally wake up and you realize that there's folks like you and your firm that are, you know, really classifying and educating and, you know, putting material out there. And, you know, what I found in this space, and I don't know if you guys feel too, but in the real estate investing world, I feel like people are so generous with their time, with their knowledge, with their expertise. And, you know, if you just take a few minutes to figure out who and where you need to position yourself, you know, it can make a world of difference. Because when I ever found out there was three buckets of income, you know, active, passive, and say portfolio, and they're taxed differently, and there's things and strategies that you can do as a blue collar kind of guy, right? As a blue collar kind of guy, I could figure this out too. It wasn't just for the quote unquote 1% or the, you know, the richest and everything. You know, there's ways if you're, and I love what you said before, you know, when you have that onboarding phone call, you know, and you let people know what strategies are available to them and you educate them, but you also find out how committed they are to real estate investing, right? Because I feel like in this world of instant gratification, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever it might be, you know, people can look at that shiny object, right? They can see the person with the you know, whatever, the bling. I don't even know the right words to say anymore, Paul. You can tell that I'm getting older. But, you know, but are you committed to this asset class? Are you committed to finding out, you know, what are the strategies, right? Tom Wheelwright says all the time that the tax code can be overwhelming to even CPAs, right? But if you use it as a roadmap to get you and your family and your wealth situation, if you use it as a roadmap to get to where you want to go and where you want to be, it's just incredible, right? I want you to touch on it again. You mentioned something about people trading their time for money, right? And it really kind of goes into the mindset. I'd love for you to kind of share your mindset when, you know, yes, you're a CPA, yes, you have a firm, you have a podcast, but when you can really unlock that passive income, right? Like not trading your time, and you get an email every month that says, ding, distribution, you know, in your account. Like, how does that change you? Even though you're a professional, you know, you got your credentials, you got your education. What's that mindset shift like for you?
It's almost unbelievable when it first happens. It's like, because if you're so used to working, I've worked since I was a teenager. And that becomes like your view of how to make money. It's like, I go work and I make money. And all of a sudden, when you make that investment, all of a sudden that investment starts paying you without you really having to do much besides just make that decision. It's like, is something wrong here? Like, is this real? Like, that was my first reaction. Like, when I first did the syndication back in 2017, you know, it's a big push to get into it. But once we got into it, there was not much we had to do, and I couldn't believe it. And even today I invest as a limited partner, and I just go ahead, I drop the money into the investment, I make that decision to make that investment, and then on a quarterly basis or monthly basis, whatever the investment agreement is, I start getting money into the bank account. And, you know, even today, it's still somewhat unreal. It's just very nice. I go into my bank account sometimes and I just more money there. And I'm like, how'd that get there? I'm like, I didn't work for that. So it's life-changing to a certain extent. It makes you want to do more of that. How can I invest more into this space to continue building my passive income and just make mailbox money, money that comes to me without me having to lift a finger, if you will?
No, it's powerful. And I think one of the things that's powerful that I've seen as well, it's not just the fact that you can shelter some income. It's not just the fact that you can shelter income from investing in passive activities. It's the net present value that you receive from having those funds available to you again, right, to then deploy elsewhere. So there's an amplifying effect that investors can enjoy by investing in passive activities and by following the tax code, right? And as Tom Wheelwright outlines, and many others certainly in the industry, the tax code as it's written is basically a big book of incentives on what all Americans can do to lower your tax burden, to keep as much of your hard-earned money for yourself, but then also to, you know, provide hopefully good services, in this case, maybe housing or jobs, to the broader economy. So it's a very powerful amplifying effect, not just for the individual, but really for the economy as well. I think it's wonderful that's something that real estate investing and being a passive real estate investor allows you to do. You know, Thomas, one thing that I certainly wanted to ask about is, you know, here we are in 2024. It's a big year. There could be some changes on the horizon. From your view, as somebody who's, you know, been in the investing game for several years, but then also who's running a business and working with, you know, obviously the IRS on many different accounting cases, and also, you know, with your clients, what changes are on the near-term horizon or maybe in the longer-term horizon that affect real estate investors? Is there anything either positive or negative out there? Of course, we've seen bonus depreciation. That's been a focus in recent years. We've seen, you know, the continued allowance for, you know, passive activities to be treated as a separate bucket of income. Is there anything out there on the horizon, or maybe accredited investors? And the definition of them. Is there anything on the horizon that you see here in the next year or so that could affect the investor landscape as it relates to taxes and our ability to maintain and keep more of our hard-earned money?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing, there's two things, but I think the biggest thing is bonus depreciation. So bonus depreciation allows you to rapidly accelerate your depreciation expense. So just to kind of take a step back for listeners who may not know how depreciation works, basically, what happens is you buy a property or you invest into a property via syndicate, and that property, if it's a residential property, say multifamily, it's going to be depreciated over 27 and a half years. So that means a little chunk of it every year is going to be depreciated. Now, with bonus depreciation, what happens is, like, when you buy that property, that multifamily building, it's not just the building. There's going to be components of that building, like appliances, carpeting, fixtures, land improvements like pools, things of that nature. Those are depreciated over a shorter period of time, somewhere between 5 to 15 years in the case of real estate. And bonus depreciation allows you to rapidly depreciate that 5 and 15 year property, which can represent anywhere between 20 to 30% of that property's purchase price, depending on the specific property. So bonus depreciation was at 100% from the tail end of 2017, like September 27th, 2017, all the way through the end of 2022. And then it started to drop down 20%. So when it was 100%, you could take 100% of that 5 and 15 year property, again, anywhere between 20 to 30% of a property's value, and just take it as a depreciation expense all in the first year, which would generally cause you to have massive losses. And so you show a big loss in the first year that you make that investment, and that's all on paper. Doesn't really exist, right? It's a phantom loss. But now it started to phase out 20% per year starting in 2023. Last year it was 80%. This year in 2024, it's going to be 60%. 2025 is going to be 40%. And 2026 is going to be 20%. And as it phases out, that initial first year loss that you would generate thanks to depreciation is going to be lower and lower. Now, that means that you want to capitalize on that while you can. Now, I will say this, that, you know, as of this recording, there is a bill that is, quote unquote, very close to coming to fruition that would extend 100% bonus depreciation, go back to 2023 and make it, instead of 80%, make it 100%, and as well as 100% all the way through 2026. So there would be no step down, it'd be 100%. And if that comes to pass, that can be very powerful for real estate investors. So that's something to keep on the lookout. The second thing I would say, and something you mentioned, the definition of accredited investor. Well, the definition, the traditional definition, to my knowledge, is not going to change. It would still be, you know, the income requirement, $200,000 for the last 2 years, and $300,000 if you're married, and then you're expecting to make the same amount this year, or $1 million net worth excluding your primary residence. But they are coming out with a test, or they're supposed to be developing a test that would allow you to become accredited even without that net worth or income requirement. So that's on the horizon. I'm trying to think if there's anything major that is coming up in 2024. Besides bonus depreciation, I don't see that much really changing for real estate investors as of now from a tax perspective.
You know, there's so much information in that last little piece, Thomas. For those who are maybe new to this podcast or new to the space, and there's a lot of terms being thrown out, right? You know, limited partner, general partner, active, passive, you know, the whole thing, you know, that's okay, right? Because there's resources out there. There's the Real Estate CPA. They have a course. They have many courses. They have a mastermind. They have a group, a tax smart investors, I think it's called, right? And you can join like a tribe, right? Because this is what people are talking about in that kind of space. And you can align yourselves with folks like Thomas and his partners over at the Real Estate CPA. So, you know, fear not, right? Because the antidote to fear is education. And there's no shortage of resources out there for you to get started doing something like this. What got me excited when I first started getting into the space was just realizing how large, the Reg D space is, right? So Reg D, you know, could be
private offerings, private placement opportunities.
Right. Unregistered. Thank you. That's what I was
saying. Unregistered, yeah.
So where are we right now? That's like, all right, so I'll have to edit that out. All right, so what gets me really excited about this space is the fact that, you know, this is not just like voodoo type stuff, you know, this is not Bernie Madoff, you know. Are there bad actors out there? Yeah, there's bad actors everywhere, but you know, when I was doing my research for this episode, I pulled up a Reg D research paper from the SEC.gov website. And it says in 2021 and 2022, $4.4 trillion of Reg D securities were sold. And no, I mean, let that sink in, right? It's a huge space, right? People are looking to diversify away from Wall Street. You know, they want to be maybe more active. They want to kick the tires on a particular deal, or real estate makes sense to them, or, you know, there's just this opportunity. And if you don't know where to look, and the people that are doing this aren't in your tribe, you never know what's available to you. So when you guys are talking about accredited investors, maybe the definition is going to be expanded or maybe actually curtailed, actually. I'm hearing that they might want to index the numbers of the salaries and net worth to inflation, because when this came out in 1983, only about 6 or 7% of the population was eligible to invest in an unregistered security as an accredited investor. And these days it's in the low teens, right? 13-14%. And if we keep going at that same trajectory, you know, it's going to be by 2052, I heard, it's going to be over 63% of the population would be accredited, because they haven't moved the goalpost on the $200,000, you know, salary, or the $300,000 if you're filing jointly, or the $1 million net worth. So it's all these things combined, you know, to figure it out. Now, my last thing before we hop into the three questions would be, you know, when I heard about depreciation, Todd Wheelwright calls it magic, and it seemed like magic, right? It seems that the non-cash loss that you could just record on paper and it could lower your taxable income. Then I heard about something called real estate professional status. And I'm going, my God, I got to be a real estate professional because this is going to be amazing, right? And then the wind gets taken out of your sails because as a W-2 employee or a 1099, you know, there are a lot of rules that are sort of surrounding the real estate professional status, how you can take depreciation. So can you talk a little bit about that, like maybe on a high level, you know, just what is real estate professional status? Who can qualify? And what would be the major benefit if you can qualify that depreciation plays into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So just the kind of preface going back to before, we're talking about non-passive versus passive, right? So the losses generated by real estate that are non-cash, they're in the passive bucket and they can only offset other passive income. So it can't offset your non-passive income. And that was put into place back in 1986 to prevent high income earners like doctors and lawyers specifically were noted in that from taking these non-cash losses and using it to significantly offset their active income or their income that they're generating through their job or business and using it to save some substantial amounts of money in taxes. Now, fast forward a few years, I believe it was 1994, if I'm not mistaken, the real estate industry was kind of ticked off. They're like, okay, well, I develop properties, I fix and flip properties, or I'm in construction, what have you. How is it fair that a doctor can go ahead and expense or depreciate their x-ray machine, for example, but I can't depreciate my rental property? So lobbying came about and the real estate professional status was born. And the real estate professional status allows investors who work effectively full-time in real estate, I'll get into the exact requirements in a second, to use the losses from their rental activities, which again are typically non-cash, to offset their non-passive income. But in order to qualify as a real estate professional, certain requirements need to be met. You spend more than 750 hours and this is the part that trips a lot of people up, and more than half your total working time in a real property trade or business. Now, there's 11 real property trades or businesses, and I can go through all of them today, but rental properties is one, property management, construction, development, being a broker or an agent. These are real property trades or businesses. And when you're spending 750 hours and more than half your total working time in these businesses, then you're able to take these losses from your non-rental income and use it to offset your W-2 or your active business income. Now, I will say one thing in there that in order to be considered in a real property trader business, you need to own at least a 5% interest in that business. So if I, you know, if I were to go take a job at a property management company, it was a W-2 job, I'm not going to be considered to be part of a real property trader business for the purposes of the real estate professional status. I would need to own at least 5%. So that's a real powerful strategy. And a lot of people sought after, highly sought after. And if I could just throw one thing in here is that even if you can't qualify as a real estate professional, perhaps your spouse can. And if your spouse can, if you're married filing joint, well, then you're both kind of effectively considered a real estate professional. So what we see is a lot of times we'll have a couple, one of them might be a doctor or physician or might be in any field that's not real estate. They may be earning a high income, and then they'll have a spouse who's either working part-time or they're fully focused on the real estate portfolio. They're able to qualify as a real estate professional, and they're able to acquire these rental properties, use these non-cash losses to offset the income, the non-passive income from the other spouse, and significantly reduce their taxes. So it's quite a powerful strategy, the real estate professional status. Now, just one last thing I want to throw out there. So a lot of people sometimes, they'll realize, okay, I can't qualify as a real estate professional, or maybe my spouse can't qualify as a real estate professional either. Like, I guess I'm SOL on this real estate thing. This isn't going to work for me. And I would put in an encouraging word there that even without the real estate professional status and the short-term rental loophole, simply investing in real estate and the ability to shelter your passive income from tax and reduce your effective tax rate is very powerful. It's a longer-term game to build up that passive income because you have to make investments into that bucket. But if you zoom out and you look over at investing in real estate over decades, over years, you start to realize, okay, you know, you can really build a really tax advantaged income simply by investing in the passive bucket, even without the real estate professional status. Having said that, if you can use the real estate professional status, by all means, go ahead, use it. It's powerful, but it's not the end all be all. And it's not something that should make or break your decision to get into real estate.
No, it's very helpful. Obviously, a lot of intricacies around the real estate professional status in general, tax and tax management involves intricacy. So it's encouraging to, you know, obviously know folks like you, Thomas, and the Real Estate CPA are out there to assist investors. And, you know, a comment before we go into our lightning round three questions. One of my biggest pet peeves out there is, especially coming from the world of Wall Street, is that you're told as a client to consult with your tax advisor. Many of us don't have a tax advisor. We have a tax preparer, and we have a retroactive look at our finances, and we're not thinking ahead and planning ahead. So, you know, something I would encourage our listeners, and, you know, we can include a link in our show notes here to the Real Estate CPA, is that there are firms and there are people like you and your colleagues who can help investors march their path forward, right? And to actually seek out tax advice, because let's face it, we're not going to always have years and decades of easy money, and we're not always going to have the easy opportunities that we've had where we can park our money in our Wall Street accounts and expect it to go up and to the right. So being a little bit more proactive is something that I think is possible. It's not too complicated to just simply reach out, ask questions, and learn a little bit more. And that's certainly something I would encourage our listeners to do. And, you know, with that in mind, it's a pretty perfect segue, I might say, to our last three questions. And Thomas, these are questions we ask all of our guests. And, you know, just answer them with what comes to mind. The first question is a quote from the great Jim Rohn, who said, "A formal education will make you a living, and self-education can make you a fortune." What does that quote mean to you?
I absolutely love that quote. I've been living by that since 2014. It's formal education is designed to almost indoctrinate you, in my opinion, into a system. But self-education can free you and make you see the whole picture and the whole playing field, the whole game of life and business and economics in a way that you're not going to be able to get from the traditional system. So self-education is not only freeing from that perspective, but can also help you develop the skills that you need to get to where you want to go. Think and Grow Rich, great book by Napoleon Hill. If you read that book, self-educate, you could put yourself on the path that you want to go. So that's what it means to me.
Love that. That's just a great quote. And we've gotten so many great answers from that. I'm so happy that we have that in our show here. The second one is from the great Robert Kiyosaki, right? A lot of us get our start reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad because we have that pain point that we just want to scratch and itch, and we read that book. And then, you know, if you're into what he's about, you kind of read a lot of his stuff and follow him. And, you know, he can be a little bit of a ornery, controversial guy these days. But he said something that goes like this: "Savers are losers and debtors are winners." Now, to the novice out there, when they hear that, that might sound crass, you know, but if you're in this space, it probably means something different. So how does that land for you, Tom?
Absolutely. You know, you want to saving your money in a bank account is not going to earn even, well, interest rates these days are not too bad, but saving your money in a bank account is usually not going to get you rich. You need to put that money to work to earn a return for you. Otherwise, what's happening is the bank's going to go be lending out your money to other people. The bank's going to be having a balance sheet full of loans that are paying them, right? People are paying them. So basically what you want to do is a concept that I learned about a while back called a balance sheet affluent versus income affluent. So if you're income affluent, you're making a lot of money. It's great. If you're balance sheet affluent, you have a bunch of assets that are earning you a yield, whether that be interest, if you're loaning money out and you're holding debt, or you're investing in real estate and that real estate's giving you passive income from rental income. The point I'm trying to make here is that you want to be on the side that where your assets are earning money and you're not paying other people. Yeah, you're going to be using debt to probably finance the real estate, but you basically don't want to be paying a lot of consumer debt. You want to be paying more like good debt, I guess they call it. So you want to be on the side where you have a balance sheet full of assets that are paying you. I guess the bottom line is what that means to me, what comes to mind.
I like that term, balance sheet affluent. That's a new one for me, but I certainly appreciate the concept, and I think it's pretty important. You know, lastly, if Thomas, you were at a party and, you know, you were describing to somebody what you do and the fact that you are a real estate investor, including a passive real estate investor, and that person says to you, isn't real estate investing too risky? How would you respond to that question?
I would say that not if you know what you're doing, right? So real estate over time is going to, it goes up, right? There might be rises and falls and like it might go up and down, but over the aggregate, over decades, it's going to shoot up. And if you're investing in the right market with the right people who know what they're doing and you have a tribe around you who could help you basically get there, then it's really not risky. They're not making any more land. The population continues to grow. Real estate's probably going to continue to appreciate if you're investing in the right place. So I would say, I think the risk that you're concerned about would be the operational risk. And you can educate yourself if you want to go that route, or you could do what I do, invest as a limited partner, find people who already know how to operate real estate, do your due diligence, and then hop in with them. And it's really not so risky. It's really not that risky if you know what you're doing. It's just educating yourself and investing with the right people, and you're going to put yourself in a good position.
Oh, I couldn't have said it any better. Education times action times surrounding yourself with the right folks. I mean, that is the equation for success right there. And so I just love that. You know, as we close out here and we're starting 2024, I really highly encourage people to, you know, take some inventory, right? Where do you want to go? What kind of goals have you set for yourself for this year? And if you have listened to the show and you got some value and you finally said to yourself, you know what? I don't have a tax guy or a tax girl. I don't have a strategy. Right? I've been doing hopium my entire life. Like, you know, this might be the time to say, look, you know, I need to find a CPA firm that understands me. They understand my goals. They understand where I am today and where I want to be tomorrow. Right? And there's people out there. And I'm going to highly suggest that you, if you're into real estate and you're into active and or passive, you know, investing in real estate, to have a conversation with these guys over at the Real Estate CPA. Because at the end of the day, I always like to say this, if you broke your ankle, you would not want to go see a neurosurgeon, even though they have MD next to their name, right? They're both doctors, right? You don't want to go see an ankle specialist. And the same thing with CPA, right? There's generalist, there's farming focused CPAs, there's real estate centric, there's crypto CPAs. I mean, there's CPA specialties for everything. And if you want to be in real estate, you have to align yourself with the right team members. So if you want to find out more about the Real Estate CPA, you can go to the link in our show notes. It's going to be www.therealestatecpa.com/cityside, and you can have a consultation. These guys have already set up a whole webpage for you to check it out. And I highly, you know, I recommend you guys go to the website, browse around. They have courses that you can buy, right? Short-term rentals. They have, you know, limited partner courses. They have, you know, all these types of things. But it'll be a starting point for you to start off on the right foot, because, I don't know, Thomas, I'm probably gonna put words in your mouth. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but the worst thing to do is to wait until like March 15th and be like, whoa, I need a tax strategy and I need a guy to talk to it now. Right. Because you want to start doing this during the other parts of the year so that you're setting yourself up for success. So Thomas, how did I do wrapping this up? I mean, is there anything else that I should have talked about, or any other resources or ways that people can get in touch with you guys?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like me and one of our advisors were talking about this yesterday. Like, you don't want to get to March and be saying, okay, what can I do for 20, you know, what can I do for last year, 2023? You want to be getting to March and say, okay, what can I do for this year, 2024? And you're looking ahead because now you have plenty of time to plot the course. So hit the nail on the head there. That's part of proactive planning. I think that's all I have.
I'm actually going to stack on top real quick, because I'm a consumer of your content. If you have any questions about real estate professional status, short-term rentals, how do I qualify? What's passive income? What's active income? I highly suggest you go to their podcast, The Real Estate CPA. Just type it into your browser on Spotify or Apple, whatever podcast, you know, platform you listen to. And they actually have it broken down into different segments. You guys can search through their previous episodes. It's really powerful stuff, and it's free, right? So you can always start somewhere. And if you want to continue that journey, you can hop on a call with one of you know, Thomas or one of his colleagues. So, Thomas, this has been a great conversation today. I thank you so much for making the time to speak to us and our listeners. And let's make 2024 a healthy and prosperous year. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. And we look forward to serving you again next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. We would be grateful for your support of our podcast by giving our show a 5-star rating and review and subscribing to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to take inspired action after listening to this show so that you can start building out your passive income streams. Finally, head on over to citysidecap.com to connect with us and find out more information about how to get started passively investing in real estate.